I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, my friends, and welcome for another Wild and Willy get-together. So, there are things going on that are starting to show us how the world may be coming apart. We're starting to see the buildup of a potential war in the Middle East, the axis of evil, the new axis of evil, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and I'm sure we could throw a couple others in there. We're starting to see the development on their end of what they may want to do going forward. So first of all, let me reach out and say, where are our hostages in Gaza? American citizens, Israeli citizens, and citizens of other countries. So initially, they took over 200 hostages when Hamas brutally attacked Israel. Now we're hearing that Hamas keeps rejecting every potential ceasefire deal that could include, hey, we'll give you, I think the last one was, we'll give you 900 prisoners and you give us the remaining 100 or so hostages. And they keep saying no. Because the belief is, and it's probably true, is that there are probably not that many left alive. As sad as that to hear for the families, but I think that's the reality. When you had women that were taken, that were raped to death, killed while being raped, and now they had access to these women for months now, children, elderly people, probably many of those, I hope they're not. I pray to God they are not dead. But I think that might be one of the reasons that Hamas will not come forward and say, okay, we'll take 900 of our killer terrorists back and give you these 40 or 50 people. I guess they figure maybe that's also a shield, because we figure they must probably be in Rafah somewhere. And if we give them the hostages, then there's nothing to really stop Israel from going in and pounding Rafah into dust, if that would be a choice that they would make. Not that I think they would do that, but it's a potential that they could do that. So I want to put that call out there. It's President Biden, Mr. Biden, these are American citizens that have been held hostage. I don't hear you speaking up for them. I don't hear you reaching out for them. I don't hear you calling out to them and their families every single day. That is feckless, my friend. That is inept. That is not a good leader. So I wanted to make sure I talked about them. Along that line, let's look at the protests that have taken place. Now, we have seen all kinds of protests, they say pro-Palestinian, but there's also pro-Hamas, there's also pro-Hezbollah. There was protests on the bridge all over the place, right? They're shutting the bridges down, and I saw these big, beautiful banners that you can't have made overnight. I mean, you know, 30 feet long, 10 feet wide, beautiful printing. That takes time. You have to order that and prepare for that. And they say, stop the world until Gaza is free, or something along that line. Stop the world. So these protests are going to go worldwide. We are in the middle of a new attack by the left worldwide. Not, and I don't mean the people, you know, our friends and family who consider themselves lefties and progressives and they're liberals. You know, they're liberals for the classic liberal kind of things. They want goodness and they want decency. They're not the ones out there doing this. These are hardcore Antifa type people that are, you know, they're dragging in the naive and the stupid into their cause. But I don't think that's our friends and family. You know, they're not out there marching. These are college kids, kids with nothing to do. Hundreds and thousands of people across the country and around the world with these protests. And really, they are giving aid and comfort to Iran. They are giving aid and comfort to Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and all these other terrorist organizations. And it's absolutely horrible. So we're going to protest. And as we have said here, protest is a good thing. People have a right for their voices to be heard. Unless, of course, you're a Republican, then you're, I guess, then when you show up somewhere and you want to protest, then I guess you're a the end of the world. You're the devil. You know, you want to do an insurrection if you show up somewhere. And I'm not talking about January 6th. That's another situation that is completely out of control, but we'll get to that at another time. What I'm looking at here are these situations that we have all these people amassing themselves out there, aligning themselves with terrorists who raped and murdered women and children and elderly people and men. And there's no shame in it. There's no shame in the anti-Semitism of it all. And it's hard to believe. You know, I remember years ago, I used to get very upset when I would watch the news and say, are people stupid? How could they not understand this? And my wife, to her credit, would say, listen, you know, you can't say people are stupid. They just have a different point of view. And I don't know. It's been, you know, 30 years since then, and it's becoming more and more clear that I don't know how you can look at this situation with Hamas and the terrorist groups in Iran. And if you're on that side, if you think that that's the right thing to do, then you must be stupid. I mean, I can't think of what else it is that you're either purposely unaware or you're aware and you don't get it. But whatever it is, it's a terrible thing for our nation. It doesn't bode well for the world that we see this. Because you know what? This continuing march back towards living under a default tyranny of government. You know, America is almost 250 years old. And we were the example of breaking away from that default position of humanity to live under a tyrant. You've heard me say this many, many times. But what we're seeing now is these people chanting for terrorist group, death to America. Can you imagine that we now have people in this country that were let in or snuck in or got here, and they are now chanting death to America in our country? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm going to say that's not right. Oh, do they have a right to do it? They have a right to say it? Yes, they do. That's free speech. My point is to all of us, do we see where this is going? Do we see what years and years of grinding liberalism has brought to our country? Do we see what this culture of death that we have developed, where abortion is the most important thing on anyone's mind, that trumps, and I don't mean that as a funny thing, but that trumps everything else. The economy, you can't feed your kids, you can't send them to a private school, you can't buy a new car, you can't pay for groceries, but I'm going to vote for Biden because he's going to let me kill my baby if I want. Now, that's very blunt, but that is what the last several elections have come down to. You know, people are expecting this red wave because everyone must be sick of this by now. We want to get back to a booming economy. We want to have a thriving military. We want to mean something again. And instead, yeah, I could vote for that stuff, but if I do, then I won't be able to kill my baby. So I'm going to stick with that, which is just shocking to me. The Roe versus Wade has been overturned, which means now it's up to your state to determine whether or not you'll be able to go in and abort your baby. And if you vote for people in your state, if that's what's important to you, then you'd be able to do it. If your state says no, you can move. So you can take your death culture with you and go somewhere where it's okay to kill babies. Right? And that's what it comes down to. And who did I hear it from on the news the other day? Bill Maher, he's like this weird figure. Sometimes he makes sense. Sometimes he's just such a raging liberal you can't listen to him. He said something very similar to Ed Koch, the former mayor of New York City back in the day. And I liked Ed Koch, even though he was a liberal. But when it came to the abortion issue, at least he was honest. He came out and said, yes, it's killing a baby. It is a baby, but you're killing it. And basically, I'm okay with that. At least he was honest about it. Well, apparently Bill Maher said recently the same thing. He says, yeah, abortion is murder, but I'm okay with it because it serves a bigger political point, right? How can you be okay with murder? See, because this is what people don't understand about a slippery slope. They don't get that. When you open a door, all right, to something that is not, I don't know how others say this, but wholesome, good, decent, when you open a door to something like that, you get everything else that's behind it. Because once that door is open, everything comes flying in. So once we have these kind of things take place, What we're seeing is exactly what is on parade every single day now. We have people in America chanting, death to America, death to Israel, in our country. How long before that turns into, we're done protesting, we're done yelling, now we're going to have to blow some stuff up? How long do you think it's going to take till that happens? How many hundreds of terrorists snuck in and were allowed in the past couple of years? They know there's quite a few people from the terror watch list who got in that are running free in this country. And then there's also a million people who came in who didn't turn themselves into Border Patrol. Why would that be? If everybody knows you turn yourself into Border Patrol and you get a phone, you get a bus ticket wherever you want to go, you get $1,000 gift cards, you get to stay in 5-star hotels, you'll get work permits. Why would you not turn yourself in to Border Patrol? Why would you take off running and hide? Well, again, you got to be stunned if you're not understanding why. Because the people that are doing that are either smuggling drugs, smuggling people, they're terrorists, or they're criminals, and they know if they turn themselves in, they may be rejected. Not by the Biden administration, of course. They would allow murderers and killers in, people with warrants. They let them all in. They say they don't, but they do. So this is going on right in our country. People screaming, death to America, death to Israel. And we're all sitting back like frogs in the water. We're just sitting back and watching this as the heat is going up. Now, I saw an Israeli representative, one of the generals, I don't know his name. He came out and he said, we are not frogs in the water. We are not afraid. We are going to go forward. Right? But here in America, we're like these stupid frogs in the water and the heat's coming up. And we're just sitting there. It's not so bad. It ain't so bad till it's boiling and we can't get out of it. And this is going to result in injuries and deaths to American citizens here in our homeland. Now, I hope to God that that doesn't happen. I hope that I'm completely wrong about that, that everyone can say, Lieutenant Joe, you were worried about nothing. All these people chanting death to America, shutting down bridges, blocking law enforcement and ambulances from getting to people that need them. That's nothing. It didn't do anything to our country. You know, all of these people coming in here who have nefarious ideas, that's nothing. It's no big deal. But the reality is we may all wake up one day and find the next 9/11 has taken place. And what are you going to say to the people who were injured and killed? Could be you, right? Could be you and somebody in your family. Right? What are we going to say to those people? Gee, sorry. We should have said something sooner. And I know I'm not talking to the people out here in America out loud land, because most of you are common sense, smart individuals, and you're not asking for any of this. This is not what you're looking for. This is the other half of our country, the other half of our country who is either deluded into believing this stuff is true, or they really hate America that much that they want to change it, because that's what this guy was calling for. I think he was in Chicago. Death to America, death to Israel, and Jesus. We don't have to get rid of just Joe Biden. We got to get rid of the whole American system. Now, there's always been people like that. Okay, there's always been people like that screaming, hollering, you know, get rid of America. America's bad. The problem now is we have a political party that covers half the country, and they certainly want to fundamentally change America and get rid of America, too. Get rid of your rights, these pesky rights that you have, this constitution of rights, it doesn't give the government any room to move, right? Unbelievable. And I'm seeing it, and I'm shocked. I'm shocked at what I'm seeing in our country, and it's all our country. But half of the people in this country, like I said, either they don't get it, they purposely don't get it, they're stupid. I don't know why. I don't know how you can look at this for 1 second and say, yeah, let's have 4 more years. Because no matter what the polls say, you know, Trump is ahead in 5 out of 6 swing states. Trump is up 55-42, whatever it is, when it comes down to it, that election, it's going to be dead heat even. And if there's any cheating involved, it'll be on the left and they could pull it out. That's just the bottom line. That's not being pessimistic. That's understanding how things actually work. Now, I would hope that if we had conservative people come out in strength in huge numbers. And we're starting to see members of the African-American community starting to say, hey, wait a minute, we've been listening to this nonsense for years and nobody's done anything for our community. You know, the Republicans are offering us the ability to have great opportunity, work hard and get ahead. So you're starting to see more people come over. We're seeing a lot of our Hispanic brothers and sisters in the country that are saying, yeah, religion's important, right? They're not this godless, lawless thing like these people on these college campuses. So maybe it won't work out the way they want. Maybe the hand of God will reach in here and save America. But whatever happens, it's coming. And it's coming to you, and it's coming to your family and your grandchildren. And you're going to have to live with these consequences. Because if we lose this election and they take the House, which looks like they probably will, they are going to run roughshod over all of our rights. I'm not just making that up. That's not fear-mongering. I look what they actually do when they have the power to do it. And they actually go after your rights. They want to curtail your free speech. They want to control your ability to have free speech. They go with the big tech, and they want to, you know, censor what you have to say if it isn't the right thing. The news media had just announced, you know, Trump's in the middle of all these bogus trials, and they're gonna cover his comments until he starts to lie or threaten people, and then we're gonna pull the plug on him. Well, what about when Joe Biden says things that are blatantly provable lies? Do they ever pull the plug on him? No, they never do. They never do. So the bias in our media is no longer something that we can say, well, we all know it's there, but it's not. Of course it's there. We recently saw the NPR guy come out and say, you know, there's 87 liberals running the place and not a conservative in the House. We know the news people are 85 or 90% registered Democrats, and the rest of the others are rhinos or independents, right? So there's no opportunity. Even Fox News sometimes starts to go off the rails. It's only here on America Out Loud that you get rock-ribbed, all-American red, white, and blue people, right? So the protests in our street, let's think about that. How would you feel if you, your child, your mother, your father, your stepson, your daughter, whatever, had a serious injury in a car accident, fell down the stairs, broke their hip, having a heart attack, whatever, and you call the ambulance? And normally the ambulance in your community, because you're in a city or in a area where there's a lot of resources, and normally that ambulance might be to you in 3 to 4 minutes to get your loved one or you hooked up and get you out of there and get you to the hospital where somebody could maybe save your life. But that ambulance can't get there because the road is blocked by these idiots that chain themselves together so that they can make a protest. I'm all for protest. Protest is real. You can't allow people to block the roads. That is dangerous. That should not be tolerated for 1 second. And what's the message that goes out? Okay. So in New York, we had that today. And the NYPD went out and started making arrests. And they moved the crowd along. In San Francisco, they blocked the Golden Gate Bridge. And they made some arrests. But they blocked the bridge for several hours. So these ambulances, law enforcement, fire, can't get to you to help you, right? That is not a protest. That is now endangering your life. So what should we do? Well, the problem we have is that where most of these things take place are in very liberal blue states. And even the people, they arrested 7 people, I think, out of 2,000 or 3,000 in New York today. They arrested 7 people. Now, they're going to be brought to the prosecutor's office. They're going to release them on a summons, and then they're never going to prosecute them. So basically, the message that goes out is, hey, you can do it. You can block the streets. You can endanger everybody. We're not going to protest. But if we had a pro-Trump rally, pro-America rally that blocked the bridges, do you think you'd get locked up and charged and they would prosecute you? You know they would. So all of these things, I did a episode a few weeks back where I talked about the symptoms of this two-tiered justice system, the symptoms of things falling apart. We can see them right in front of us. They're crystal, crystal clear. It's no longer a guessing game. You know, it's now a threat to your liberty, to your life, to your freedom. And if we lose this election, you will be regulated into the ground. You will be taxed into the ground. It will be terrible. It absolutely be terrible, because they'll do even more of what they've already done. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Okay, so one of the things, I'm teaching a course right now on leadership and what it means to have good leadership and what is bad leadership and how good leadership can affect any organization, a country, a state, a basketball team, doesn't matter. Good leadership leads to quality outcomes, people getting better at what they do, people having a mission, people focusing, doing the right thing. The leadership we have now, and we can go on and on about Joe Biden being an old, feeble man, because he is. He's an old, feeble man. And, you know, that's not his particular fault, because that happens to everybody. I mean, people get old, they get feeble, they start to lose their minds. But the reality is that he's going to run for president again, and these people are going to vote for him in droves. And like I said, they could say it was 70 to 30 for Trump, and on election day it'll be 51 or 52 for Biden, 48 for Trump. I'm not being pessimistic. I just see behind all of these polls and all this nonsense, we can see it in the street. We can see the actions in the street indicating what people are going to do. Now, I read one pundit who recently said, well, he thinks that all of these protesters and everyone are so mad at Joe Biden for supporting Israel that they may not come out for the election. They may stay home. They may sit home. And in that case, we may have a chance to win at least the presidency. But we'll see what happens. But our leadership is extremely weak. Here we had Iran. Iran launched 300 missiles, cruise missiles, all kinds of things at Israel. The bottom line is those missiles were not meant to just do a fireworks show so they could save face and say, look what we did. If the Iron Dome and the Americans and the United Kingdom, France, and I think Jordan pitched in, I think maybe even Egypt pitched in to try and knock those things down out of the sky, had they not done that, 300 missiles would come raining down on the heads and homes of Israeli citizens. You would have had hundreds of people dead. That was the intent. That was the intent. And I think people are missing out on that, because they were masterfully taken down. And apparently half of the weapons, which were Chinese weapons that the Iranians had, didn't work, which is a good thing. You know, say, oh, at least we know that not everything works. But that's a lot of weapons to come down, 300. Their intent was to kill people. And one little girl, 10 years old, I think she is, she's in critical condition. So this little child was killed by Iran in Israel. And the world is, Joe Biden is so weak because he's trying to save 100,000 votes in Michigan of the Muslim community there by telling Israel, back off, back down, back off, back down. This is an ally that is under attack from all sides. And instead of standing up, he's standing down. He is weak. He is feckless. He is dangerous. See, I think we all know this from history. When you give in to a bully, the bully doesn't go away and say, well, that's the end of that. The bully comes back and says, now give me the rest of your lunch. Right? The bully doesn't go away. They are emboldened when you back down, when they humiliate you. And Iran, for the first time ever, actually fired on Israel. And people are not, they didn't do any damage. They were only one little kid and they had some, shrapnel damage. They just fired 300 weapons on an ally. It is as bad as knowing that Hamas has American hostages for months and we've done nothing. Now, the conversation here has to be had. If America does anything more direct, if anything else happens where America shoots down an Iranian airplane or bombs some of their oil fields to say, you better give us back our hostages. Of course, that could explode into a larger war. That could mean the death of American military personnel, damage actually heating up the war, firing different kind of missiles, bombs, and things that would really kill a lot of people. But this has been the age-old concern. You know, when Hitler began his rampage of terror, people tried to appease him. You know, they think if they appease the demon, then the demon will go away. But did he go away? No, he did not. He continued, emboldened, because people were afraid of him. And I don't like the idea of war. I have military age young men in my life, in my family. And I don't want them being called up and telling me they have to go die on some battlefield in the Middle East. But the reality is, like for America forever, we have to be prepared to use our might for good, because this can get out of hand and escalate into something that goes on for years. See, I could see a scenario where Iran says, hey, we fired on Israel. We could see how this works out. Now the Americans are caught up in this whole mess. There's protesting all over America. And now China decides, okay, that's it. We're going in for Taiwan. What are we going to do? Do you think Joe Biden, he can't handle oatmeal in the morning? Do you think he's going to be able to handle fighting a war in Taiwan against China? Fighting in the Middle East against Iran, having North Korea start acting up and doing, this is how this gets out of control. And I don't mean to say it like this, but there comes a time when it's better to take a punch in the nose and beat the bully so that they're vanquished than to keep appeasing and showing weakness and showing fear, because bullies and bad people and demons do not go away when you show weakness. And Joe Biden is very, very weak. All he's doing is inviting all of this. And our friends on the left are just as bad. They are trying to position themselves to get those voters in Michigan so that they will not stand up for our ally, our only ally in that region that needs our help. And they are not helping. They're backing down. They're sending out messages that they want them to stop. They're appeasing our enemies. That is dangerous, that is weak, and that's going to lead to a lot more problems in the future. We will be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud. 58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud for 25% off.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Okay, my friends, welcome back. All right, so real quick, I just want to tell you about the Healthy Cell products. I know I've mentioned them before. I hope you're getting it. I hope you're writing it down, Healthy Cell products. They make all kinds of different things to help you be healthy, help you to sleep better, help you to help your memory. I take the immune boost. It has helped keep me healthy for a long time. All the products are here on the network, as there are many other really awesome things, including my books. So if you go to my page or you go to the bookstore, you can see my books, The Interview or The Investigation, or you can find Healthy Cell products. There's awesome things there. And listen to all these other shows on this network. This is really the flagship for freedom and free speech. All right, so we were discussing the Iranian attack and how do we respond. Well, I initially got very upset when I heard that, you know, we're telling Israel, okay, just take your lumps. And Iran said, okay, this is concluded now. You did something to us. We did something to you. That's it. We've done what we're going to do. And America, you better stay out of it, right? The problem we have is our fear, and not unsubstantiated fear. We don't want to lose people. But this war on terror, this war on this ideology of hatred and death does not go away unless you make it go away. The Nazis weren't going to go away on their own. The Imperial Japanese weren't going to go away on their own. North Korea doesn't decide, well, we'll be good guys and good girls now, right? They're not going to decide that on their own. The Chinese are going to continue to extend their grip on parts of the world and reinforce what they're doing until they can become the next power. They think hundreds of years down the road, not 5 minutes down the road, not what's the most expedient thing politically. And this is the greatest danger to us and our legacy going down the road. So when people see weakness, they attack it. When they don't see good leadership, they attack it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the leadership things, some pointers on leadership, and then you compare them to our president and see how he does some of these things. So one of the things I want to talk about was President Biden was asked, now he's president of the United States, the leader of the free world, the most powerful man on the planet, and we see our ally being bombarded by an enemy who would kill all of us if they could. If they have a nuclear weapon, they'll kill all of us. What will they do with it? And they say to him, what words do you have for Iran? And he says the same stupid thing that he has said over and over again. He says, don't. Don't. Well, Mr. President, they did. So that makes you even look weaker and stupider. Okay, and this is what I'm talking about. You know, we know the man's corrupt, his family's corrupt, but he can't be the president anymore. He doesn't have the wherewithal. Could you imagine saying don't? And that's not the first time he's don't, don't. So that's a big warning, don't. As opposed to saying something like this. Mr. President, Iran just shot all these rockets at our ally, Israel, and they're threatening to do more, and they're telling us to back out. Do you have anything to say to them? Yes. I would like to address the Iranian people first. And I would say, you are not our enemy. The regime that's running your country, the mullahs that are running your country, this suicidal, insane group of people who are leading your country down a path that is going to be destructive for the people of Iran. They are inflaming the world and threatening the world to go into World War III. So as President of the United States, I would like to send this message to your leadership. We don't have a problem with the people. We would support you if you were to rise up against that government. But to the leadership of Iran, let me be very, very clear to you. If one more missile is launched at an American asset or an American ally, when you wake up in the morning, you will have no Navy anymore. I will direct the United States military to sink and destroy all of your naval vessels. If there is a response to that, you will not have oil fields anymore. That will be gone. The next step, if you continue, I will target government buildings all over Iran, military leadership, command and control, and your government leadership buildings. Now, you can take this as an idle threat. You can take this as something to overlook. But I'm not going to have much more to say on it. I am now telling you, we have had enough in America. So instead of just saying don't, I'm going to tell you, do not do another thing that is detrimental to the United States or our allies, or you will suffer the consequences. Now, that's a little lengthy speech there from Lieutenant Joe. But, you know, people could say, well, that's warmongering. You're threatening to go to war. You're threatening to go to war. We could destroy them from afar with our military, with our missiles, with our ships, with our aircraft. We could do all of those things with very, very little loss. We probably would lose some people. But the reality is, these are the hard things. So when I was teaching this class today on leadership, and I'm teaching it to law enforcement leaders, and I'm telling them, we have to make hard decisions sometimes, don't we? We make very, very difficult decisions. You know, as much as I love plumbers and electricians, when they go to work every day, the decisions they make don't mean that their employees are going to die. When I go to work every day as a law enforcement guy, I could order my people into a situation where they get killed, where they have to sacrifice for the greater good. They do what they're supposed to do. Law enforcement goes to work every day, just like the military, with weapons. And there's a reason for that. So while I wouldn't want to say nobody would get hurt, because of course they would in any conflict, people would. But if you lay down such a devastating response to bullies like Iran, sure, they can fly their aircraft. Their aircraft are outdated. Their pilots are outdated. They don't have much of an air force. We have a Navy that could get up close. We have aircraft that could go in and pound all those targets I just meant into dust in 24 hours. We took back, remember the Schwarzkopf? In 100 hours, he threw Saddam Hussein out. So we could certainly go in and do those. And the mullahs, they could go hide, but you dust all of their government facilities, their command and control. Then you support the people of the country when they want to rise up and get rid of them. You help them. Right? You send them supplies so that they can go in and do it. That's very hawkish. But you know what? Sometimes you have to be. Sometimes you have to face the bully, and you have to try and stop the bully with ways other than words. Because words only go so far. When you have weak leadership and people have no fear, you will follow through with what you say. When you say don't, and then they do, and you say, well, we're not getting involved, we're stepping down. You step back from that brink. You have just told them you are weak and you are nothing to fear. And when bullies have nothing to fear, that's when you have danger. So no, I don't want anybody to fight. I don't want to lose an American soldier, sailor, airman, marine, nothing. But at the same time, we could be losing lots and lots of people, civilians, and our military, just like our law enforcement, are sworn to protect. And sometimes that means the ultimate sacrifice. Every day I went to work, I left my wife and my children at home, and I went into work, and I strapped on my gun and my badge, and I went out to do my work. I knew I could die that day. I knew that I may have to sacrifice my life to protect one of the citizens or a brother or sister officer. And I accepted that because I believed it was the right thing to do. And that's what I'm saying about this. You know, we've become very squeamish in America with using our power because we have weak people who see the use of power as oppressive and this, and as opposed to the peace you could bring to the world. After World War II, when the United States power annihilated the Nazis and the Imperial Japanese, we brought peace to the world. Right? We brought peace to the world through that sacrifice and through that ultimate use of power. Well, sometimes that's what you have to do. Do you think these people are going to back down and all of a sudden just be good neighbors to Israel? Do you think Iran is building a nuclear bomb and we're sitting back doing nothing about it? The Israelis, they found out that there was a reactor in Iraq and they went in and bombed it. It was dangerous to cross over with your aircraft, but they went in and they destroyed that. Then they went to Syria when they found out there was another reactor there. They went in and they destroyed that reactor. Why? Because it was the right thing to do. Those people would have used that weapon, the weapons-grade uranium and all that stuff that they make at these reactors, to make weapons to destroy Israel and to threaten everyone else in the Middle East. So therefore, they ordered their pilots in to do the right thing. They weren't being war hawks or warmongers. They did what they had to do to protect themselves. So that's kind of where we're at here. And without strength, without a leader who understands this, can make the case to the American people, without the American people getting their act together and understanding the danger we are in this world, the losses that people could suffer by being weak, then we're going to have a serious, serious problem. So don't. Well, Mr. President, you don'ted them, and they did. Now what do you do? Maybe add a few more words. I told you, don't. Didn't you hear me say don't? Or don't. Maybe say it 3 times. I don't know. Either way, it is absurd. Absolutely absurd what we just saw happen and our president's response. And then to say, if Israel does respond, we're not going to participate. So we're going to abandon our ally at a time that they were just attacked and they need us. Very, very bad. Very, very bad. All right, so I told you I'm teaching a leadership kind of a course. And it is leadership for law enforcement, but it could be for any organization. Everybody needs good leaders, right? There's an old saying, the fish rots from the head down. Well, the reality is that leader, if they're a poor leader, they'll damage an organization. If they're a good leader, they'll strengthen that organization. It doesn't matter what the organization is. I was in a police department, and we had different kinds of leaders over the years. We had an old-time police chief who had been there for many, many years. And he was a good leader, a good man, good, strong leader. But he was only there for a couple years when I first came. And we were replaced by a good man. He was in the detective bureau, and he was a good guy. And he was captain, he made chief. And he tried to be strong and good to the cops and fair to everybody. And I thought he was very good. I liked him a lot. And he was... He was general. He used autocratic responses when he had to make a rule or enforce a rule. Now, he was democratic when he tried to work with everybody in the agency to come up with new ways to do things and be progressive and try and, you know, protect the community, which was really good. But when he left, the next chief we had was a very good man that everybody liked. He was very popular. Matter of fact, there was 3 captains that could be up for chief, and the other 2 were like, listen, you've been here longer, you're a good guy, you put in your time, you be the chief, we'll step back, which is unusual in any organization. So this guy became the chief, and he was a very, very nice man. He liked everyone, he wanted everyone to get along. His approach, his leadership style was laissez-faire, which if you study leadership styles, laissez-faire means laid back, relaxed, not a lot of rules, not a lot of regulation. Everyone do their job. Let's all stick together. And unfortunately, laissez-faire, while it does work for certain parts of an organization, you have very highly motivated people, and then they have a laissez-faire leader, they can get along fine because they're self-motivated. They're going to do the things that they're supposed to do. But everyone else suffers because when you remove rules, regulations, when you remove mission, when you remove all of that, and there's no consequences for anything because, you know, people would do something wrong purposely. All right, so one of the one of the big concepts to wrap your head around was people make mistakes when they're doing their job, when they're doing, no matter where you work, people make mistakes. And the reality is, do they make a mistake of the head or of the heart? And the difference is this. If you make a mistake of the head, that means you did something purposely wrong. You cut a corner. You violated a policy. You did something to get ahead without doing it the right way. When that happens, somebody does something of the head, that person should receive discipline because they purposely did something wrong. When somebody does something of the heart, it's when they're trying to do the right thing, but the situation can be liquid. It can switch and change on them and all those kind of things. When that person does something and they did it by the heart, they were trying to do it right and it went sideways, that's a time for training, retraining, additional training. It's not a time for punishment. So when we look at laissez-faire, what happens is when you take away the rules, the regulations, and the parameters that people have, people like it, but they get lax, and you see injuries. You see people not following through. So, you know, the leadership in our department was very frustrated with the chief because the sergeant would write somebody up for doing something of the head, and they'd want to hold them accountable. Because believe it or not, that happens a lot in police departments. And they would bring this to the chief, and I think he should be charged. And the chief said, he's a good guy. It's his first time doing something like this. Why don't you just go talk to him? And you could see that that laissez-faire is akin to a weakness because there was nothing to back it up. So basically, it emasculated all the supervisors, all the men and women that were trying to do the right thing, and it left everyone to the weakest link. Don't worry about it, right? The next chief we got after him was an autocrat. This guy was an incompetent individual. He was not good with people. He was not very smart. And the way he compensated for his lack of skill sets was by being a bully, because he was a bully. He was, just like most bullies, he felt inadequate around other people, especially that were good at what they did. And he tried to bully everybody. And he enforced laws and rules in the department unequally. You know, some rules were good for some people, some were good for others. If you were loyal to him and on his side, right or wrong, you would often avoid any kind of a punishment, even if you did something wrong of the head, if you made a purposeful thing, but you're on the team, so you're okay. He arbitrarily identified rules that only affected some people and not others, and that caused great, great problems. It caused everyone to basically just go through their job so that they didn't get in trouble. And of course, that damaged the agency. So leadership, depending on the style and the kind of leadership, can really affect any organization. And America is an organization, and our country is suffering now from very poor leadership. So the very last chief, the guy who's there now, he was a young guy when I was there, and he was a good man. Very good man, a good cop, but never really aggressive, never distinguished himself in the world of drug arrests or gun arrests or, you know, robbery arrests. He did his job, you know, simple as that. Well, he gets made chief, and I saw him at a function not too long ago, and I said, hey, you know, what's your leadership? What are you going to do for the department? What's your, you know, every chief has some idea. I'm going to, you know, revamp the building. I'm going to upgrade the police equipment. They're always going to do something in their tenure to mark their tenure. And I said, what are you going to do? And he said, I am going to try and repair the damage that's been done to this agency in the last 20 years by the last two chiefs. I said, really? He goes, yep, that I hope that to be my legacy, that we had a very progressive, dynamic police department that served our public, prevented crime, went after bad people. And the last 20 years, it's been very poor leadership here. And people were hurt, people were uncomfortable, people were charged inappropriately, and I hope to fix that. And I thought that was a really, really very, very good way to dedicate himself to what he was going to do as the chief. Absolutely excellent. So leadership styles do make a difference and how we do them in any organization. So there was a experiment that was done, and this was part of my class today to explain to these sergeants and lieutenants, corporal sergeants and lieutenants, It was done a while ago. And basically, they went to a college classroom and they told the teacher in the classroom that they were going to give a test to all the students, and they broke them into two different groups and they administered the test. Now, the reality of this was that this was an experiment. It was not about the test. The test wasn't real. Didn't matter what they put down on the test. The tests were not graded. But what happens is the person running the experiment came back and said to the teacher, okay, this group over here, they did excellent on this test. They did tremendous. They did so good that it indicates that they will be the next leaders. They will be successful in all that they do. They are the people that really should be leading in the class, and they will lead as they go forward in all their jobs. It's clear from the way they took this test. The other group, on the other hand, they didn't do so well, and they're probably not going to do very well in life or in their jobs or anything else. It's unfortunate, but that's how it came out. Now remember, this was a fake test. The purpose was, this was all about expectations and setting expectations for people to see how it came out. And what they found was, by the end of the year, all of the students who were told that they were excellent and they would be leaders and they would be great, their grade point average actually went up. Their discipline problems went down. They did much, much better. Conversely, the group that they said, you didn't do so well, you're probably not going to be so great, their numbers went down. And this experiment has been repeated over and over in every kind of industry, and the same thing comes out every single time. It's about the expectations of a leader. And this is where I can relate this to our president when he comes out and he says something as foolish and empty as don't to an enemy who would kill all of us if they could. He's not setting very high expectations. So when a president comes out and says, listen, the American people, this is going to be hard, but we are people of freedom. We are people of liberty. We are people for justice around the world. And these are the things we need to do. He inspires. He calls us to our better angels. Or she, could be a female president. They call us to our better angels. They have high expectations of us. We will do better as a country, right? Joe Biden has given us low expectations. We're not going to participate in anything that the Israeli does to fight back. We're not going to do this. We're going to appease our enemies. That gives low expectations, and you will have low expectation responses. So there's three effects of things that you can do with people to help motivate them, to move them to be greater, right? And this is all leadership stuff. So the first one is the Pygmalion effect. Now, if anybody remembers a movie from the 1960s called The Pygmalion, it was about a woman, and I believe she was a street girl from London, and two very rich guys basically had a bet, and they said, you know, one guy said, I think I could turn her into a princess by the way I treat her, the things that I do, and this and that. And the other guy said, I don't think you can do it. People are who they are. So what they did is they took this girl off the street. They gave her etiquette lessons. They gave her clothing. They gave her makeup. They gave her, debutante things, whatever they do to make this young woman more like a member of the royal family, that kind of lifestyle. And she turned into that. So, and what it was is it was high expectations were set of her. And the whole idea is, if you set high expectations for people, they will very, very often rise to those expectations. If you have low expectations, they will fall to those low expectations. So think about your children. You have your children. And a question I always ask is, do you want them to do better than you did in life or worse than you? And universally, the answer is, of course, I want them to do better than me. So do you set low expectations for your children, or do you set high expectations? And they said, I guess I set high. I said, well, I know I did with my children. I have four children, all very, very smart, good, and decent young people. And I set high expectations for them. You know, you're going off to on this sports team. Well, I'm not much of a basketball player. I know you're not, but I know that you can do really well. I'll get you a lesson, and I think you'll be great. And they did much, much better. When they went off to school, you know, they tried for some higher-end schools that were out of our financial range, that without them doing great on the SATs and placement interviews and all that, they wouldn't have been able to go to these way past my financial ability, especially when I was younger. And I told each and every one of them that I believed in them, that I knew they could do excellent on the test. They could study and they would be smart enough to figure out exactly what they needed and then take the test. And they would come out great on the test and their interviews would be fantastic because they're good people, they're funny people, they're nice people. And all four of these kids went in and they absolutely destroyed the SAT tests. They did the interviews, they got into every school they wanted to get into, and they're all going to be leaders because they were good. Not because of what I did. They did the work. I simply motivated them by setting high expectations of them so that they would fulfill that. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So they thought someone that cared about them, their mother and father, who loved them, they respect us, and we respected them and felt they could achieve this. We knew they had the tools to do it. They just had to apply themselves. And they rose to those expectations, and they did great. So that's the Pygmalion effect. There's another effect out there. It's called the Golem effect. Now, the Golem effect is exactly the opposite. This is where you set low expectations for people. You might say something like, listen, I know you want to go to Harvard, but you know what? You know, we both know you really don't have the grades, and you know, you never did really well in school. Maybe you should settle for a state school or a community college would be good for a person like you, right? Now, because they love their mother and father, they respect their mother and father, when their mother and father say a thing like that and set such low expectations for them, they're probably going to sink down to that low expectation. Do you get how this works? That's the Golem effect. And then the third one involves the leader, you and me, whether it's your family leader, church leader, business leader. The Galatia effect is a self-fulfilling prophecy where you, as the leader, tell yourself, I think I can do really well here. I think I can motivate. I can get buy-in. I can help my team do better. I think I can push myself and give my best performance so that my team, my company, my church, group, whatever that I'm in charge of, is going to be better because I'm going to be better. And what you find is that in most cases, if you set high expectations for yourself, you will also rise to those high expectations. Every time I try and do a show, you know, I take my notes, I do my study, and I say to myself, really, try as hard as you can to do an entertaining show, an informative show, say an opinion so that people think, and I hope that many of these shows you find interesting, you enjoy them, you like them. Quite a few of you download the program. I think that's great. You know, but that's the Galatia effect. You know, when I teach a class, I pump myself up that I'm going to go in and give a good performance. I'm going to help people learn. And then I go in and the class comes out great, and I'm very happy for that. So leadership changes the dynamic of any organization and of people individually, including ourselves. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have very good leadership in the country, and we need good leadership if we're to survive these crises that are coming. And we are to have a golden future instead of one of danger. We'll see you soon. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.